Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. It's Tuesday, April 30th. I'm Stephen Overly. When you hear the name Consumer Reports, you probably think of product reviews. You know, vacuum cleaners, cars, dishwashers. But the organization has a whole advocacy operation as well. One that tracks and influences state and federal laws that impact consumers. That's where Grace Getty works as an AI policy analyst.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we do so much great work on consumer product testing, and I think it's complementary, right? Like, if you don't have standards, if you don't have safeguards, it's very hard to take action and hold companies accountable when they are creating consumer harms. It's much easier to say, hey, look, this company violated an existing law that we have.
These days, Grace is most focused on what she calls the tsunami of AI legislation, cropping up in states all across the country, including bills that could force companies to tell consumers when AI is making decisions about them.
For example, you know, who qualifies for a home loan? Who gets which job? How is bail set? Increasingly, you know, software is being used for those decisions, and those have really big stakes for consumers.
Grace has written an op-ed for Politico arguing many of these state bills have loopholes, gaps that she believes companies can easily exploit to avoid accountability for how AI is used. And with many state legislative sessions soon coming to an end, she says the time to bulk up the bills is now. Here's our conversation. Well, Grace, welcome to Politico Tech.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been tracking state AI legislation. Walk us through a little bit kind of how you've seen that grow and develop.
Yes, there is an absolute tsunami of state-level AI bills, hundreds and hundreds. And, you know, in some ways that's good. I think state lawmakers have taken to heart that in a lot of areas of technology, lawmakers have kind of been on the back foot and have in some cases waited too long to legislate. And so I think there is this awareness that this time around with AI, there's a desire to be responsive to harms that are already occurring. So that's really good. I mean, there are AI bills on just so many disparate subjects, everything from election deepfakes to voice cloning software to this issue of bias that I mentioned to like AI watermarking and labeling. So it's certainly a very active area of policymaking. And especially as we get kind of further into the spring when some state houses will wrap up business, I'll be very curious to see which ones actually make it over the finish line.
Well, you've written an op-ed for Politico talking in particular about the fact that 10 states have introduced bills to deal with AI decision-making in areas like housing and employment and issues that have real consequences for people's lives. What's the landscape right now as you see it?
Yeah, so I mean, at least 10, if not more. Yes, so there are a bunch of states considering legislation on this kind of AI used for these high-stakes decisions. The states that I'm paying closest attention to at this very moment, you know, in late April and things could change, are Connecticut, Colorado, and California, in part because the bills in those states are being carried by, you know, politically influential lawmakers, and so they kind of have real legs, politically speaking. And, you know, it's very clear to me that state lawmakers are in conversation with each other and are kind of looking to see what best practices are, looking to see what might be in the first AI bias bill that passes. And I think that will be a really influential political signal to kind of every other state lawmaker. So I think there may be this domino effect. Once one state passes an AI bias bill, we could see a lot of states pick up and like kind of start by copying it and then maybe making their own tweaks to it. But I think there will be this ripple effect.
With that in mind, you know, you've written that some of these bills contain what you call industry-friendly loopholes. Tell me about that. What are the biggest loopholes that you see in some of the bills that have been proposed?
So, I mean, one really important factor, and maybe this is, maybe the term loophole doesn't apply best to this, but one really important factor is the strength of enforcement, right? Because it almost doesn't matter what's in a bill if companies think they are not likely to be caught. Like if they think enforcement will be infrequent or the penalties will be low, they might decide, hey, it's not super likely we'll be caught if we don't comply, so we're just not going to comply. And you know, this is something that we've actually kind of seen in the nation's first private sector AI bias bill, which was just pertaining to employment. And this was in New York City. And it's been in effect now for a little bit less than a year. And there was some initial research when it was in effect for 6 months, I think, from Cornell and Data and Society and Consumer Reports looking at compliance with that law and just extremely low levels of affirmative compliance. Something like 4% of companies in the sample were posting the bias audits they were supposed to post, right? So that's not what we want to see. And we want to prevent a situation like that happening when bills get passed at the state level. So it's important that these bills are robustly enforced and that companies feel they really need to comply. Right now, almost all of these bills are exclusively enforced by state attorney generals. Those offices do incredible work, but they are very thinly spread with all the laws they're already trying to enforce, under-resourced. And so, you know, we would like to see consumers be able to bring their own lawsuits when they're harmed. That's by and large how consumer protection laws are already enforced, civil rights laws are already enforced, or at the very least, you know, have more state agencies that are able to bring enforcement actions.
One of the loopholes you identified in some of these bills is that companies can claim that AI-related information is a trade secret or proprietary and that use that to sort of avoid some of the disclosure or transparency requirements. Can you tell me a bit about that and what are the issues you see there?
Some of the ways that these bills would really move the ball forward is they'd create some kind of basic disclosure requirements to consumers, because right now, if an AI, you know, program screened your resume, Stephen, and decided, you know, you're not a good fit for this job, you won't make it to the next round, like, you probably wouldn't know about it. You know, there's no requirement that they tell you. And so that makes it hard to kind of exercise your existing civil rights or even catch if the AI program made a decision based on, like, inaccurate information about you. Like, if it confused you with a different Stephen Overly with an entirely different CV, you'd probably want to know that. But right now, there are just very few disclosure requirements. So something that these bills do that is good is they require companies to make some disclosures when they're using AI to make these kind of high-stakes decisions about you. But they say companies, at least in the case of, like, the bill in Connecticut and Colorado, companies can withhold confidential or proprietary or trade secret information. And, I mean, trade secret is actually defined under the law. Confidential and proprietary is, like, potentially a really huge category.
Right.
And so what we want to avoid is, like, those important disclosure elements becoming really not useful if companies are, like, saying that a lot of information about, like, the factors their programs consider or how they make decisions is confidential.
And with that in mind, how do you think companies should disclose to consumers that they're using AI to make decisions or explain what decisions it makes? I mean, in some contexts, if you take employment, for instance, you know, you may interview with humans and not get a job and not know why you didn't get it, right? They may not disclose the reasons in that case either. So I wonder, when it comes to AI, what do you think is the appropriate way of making those disclosures?
So what we've been kind of looking for in these bills and pushing for is both a notice kind of upfront, a disclosure that AI will be used to make this decision about you, you know, in this specific situation, in the situation where you've applied to the job or you've applied for a home loan, not just like for everyone all the time, and disclose what information about you it's taking into consideration, because there are factors, you know, that I think at least I would be concerned if it was taking into consideration. Like, if an AI was like, oh, we predict this female applicant is at elevated risk, you know, to become pregnant in the next 5 years, so she could be a costly employee, I think that'd be really inappropriate. And I would want to know that was a factor in, you know, a factor that's being weighted in some AI hiring program that's making a recommendation. And also for consumers and workers who have a legal right to seek accommodations, if, you know, they're going to be assessed on by an AI program on some basis where they would, you know, they should be able to get legal accommodations, they would need to know that in advance. So there's the kind of heads up before the decision is made. And then we also think there should be a post-decision explanation, especially for cases where it turns out factors were considered that, like, are inappropriate factors for that kind of decision, or, you know, straight up accuracy issues where the decision was based on information that the AI program inferred about you that just is not true.
I'm curious with these issues that you've identified in these bills, do you, you know, basically feel like they're maybe getting too much credit or more credit than they deserve?
I don't know about more credit than they deserve. I mean, they are tackling this important subject, right? Like, and it's hard work to legislate on this issue because, frankly, state lawmakers are being inundated by industry lobbying, especially on the subject of AI used for decision making. So credit to lawmakers for deciding to tackle this thorny subject. I think it's very worth attempting to legislate on, or legislating on, not just attempting. So they should be getting attention, and they should be getting, you know, especially attention from consumer protection groups, civil rights groups, privacy groups, I mean, and even like housing groups and criminal justice groups, because they extend to bail algorithms and just this really wide swath of life circumstances. And so if anything, I think there should be more attention directed to these bills so we make sure that they come out in a way that is going to be, you know, provide some baseline protections and are also like actually usable for normal people to exercise their rights.
You mentioned the industry lobbying, which is a really important point. I know that some industry lobbyists have really been pushing for legislation at the federal level, right? Saying that state laws effectively create a patchwork of regulation that's hard to comply with. We've heard that argument before. I'm curious what you make of it in this AI context.
I mean, it's an interesting argument because we haven't had comprehensive legislation from Congress on a lot of different issues within technology for decades.
Right.
So if Congress passes a really consumer protective bill that deals with all of these issues, great, I'm all for it. But I think if we take that industry line to its logical conclusion, we might be waiting decades. So I don't think that's fair to consumers, you know, who are already being denied home loans and employment opportunities by AI systems that are like potentially flawed or biased. I don't think waiting for Congress to act is the right way to address this. I mean, the other thing to your point about a patchwork, we have about 15 states have comprehensive like consumer data privacy bills. Some of them are very similar, but they do differ state to state. And like the American tech industry has not collapsed. And in fact, you know, we've seen the growth of this, the massive growth of the AI industry in the wake of those bills. So, you know, I think if states pass AI bias bills, they could offer some important protections.
Right. I mean, I guess with that in mind, from a consumer perspective, do you think state-level legislation is a preferred route in some ways, even over a federal bill? In part, as you said, because Congress takes a long time to regulate this stuff if they ever get to it.
I mean, it's kind of hard to think about state versus federal policymaking in a content-neutral situation, right? Like, if any of these bills get really watered down, they could easily be worse than doing nothing at all. And so that would be a bad outcome. And they could continue to change a lot in the next 2 weeks or less than 8 days. So it's a real open question what these bills will look like as kind of legislating and negotiating proceeds.
What's the big state you're watching out of all of these where this is sort of playing out most intensely?
Connecticut.
Connecticut. Why is that?
Connecticut, because Senator Maroney there has been, his bill, you know, has been introduced for a long time. He's been putting out lots of different versions of it, clearly working with lots of different stakeholders, including, you know, consumer protection advocates. I've had many meetings with him, or a few meetings with him, I should say. And he's in communication with state lawmakers in a bunch of different states. They're clearly paying attention to what he does. So, I mean, I'm certainly paying attention to other states closely as well, but it seems like many states have their eyes on what Connecticut is doing.
Yeah, very interesting stuff there. We had Senator Maroney on our podcast a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact. So yeah, Connecticut is definitely an interesting one to watch. Well, listen, Grace, really interesting and insightful breakdown of these bills. Thanks for being here on Politico Tech.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. Be sure to check out Grace's full op-ed at politico.com. And for more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. See you back here tomorrow.